If you dig the twisted, admire the outlandish, and are enamored by the unusual, you're in the right place. True crime, the supernatural, the unexplained, now you're speaking our language. If you agree, join us as we dive into the darker side. You know, because it's more fun over here. Welcome to Total Conundrum.
Warning, some listeners may find the following content disturbing. Listener discretion is advised.
Ha 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 ha. Hey, welcome back, Conundrum crew, to another thrilling episode of Total Conundrum. Your favorite duo of mystery mavens is here to tickle your curiosity with another deep dive into the unknown.
That's right, folks. And today we're embarking on a journey that's not only mysterious, but incredibly important. We have the privilege of hosting a remarkable guest who's fighting for justice in the shadows.
Joining us is the incredible Sarah from Voiceless Behind Bars. She's a tireless advocate for those wrongfully imprisoned, shining a light on the injustices they face and giving them a voice in the darkness.
Sarah's work is truly inspiring, and we're honored to have her here with us today. We'll be delving into the heartbreaking reality of innocent people incarcerated, discussing the challenges they endure, and how we can support their fight for freedom.
But before we dive in, folks, a quick reminder to all our Conundrum crew out there. Don't forget to like, follow, and subscribe to Total Conundrum on all your favorite podcast platforms. And keep an eye out because we'll be featuring trailers from our friends over at Dairyland Frights and Afrocentric.
That's right. So hit those buttons, ring those bells, and join the adventure. Now, let's give a warm welcome to Sarah and get this conversation started. We'll be back after these messages.
Hello, my spooky friends. This is your host, John, from Dairyland Frights, the paranormal podcast that covers everything spooky, creepy, and mysterious in the Midwest.
This is actually John. I hope my spooky voice scared you. And in this podcast, we're going to have creepy guests and spooky tales and mysterious sightings of cryptids, UFOs, ghosts, and everything paranormal. So tune in if you dare to be scared.
Hey, everybody. We have a special guest today. We have Sarah D'Armond. Did I say that right?
You did.
Great. I was worried about that. From Voiceless Behind Bars. And Sarah, can you tell us a little bit about what you advocate for and how we can find you?
Hi, my name is Sarah D'Armond. My nonprofit is Voiceless Behind Bars. You can find it at voicelessbehindbars.org. And I also run my own podcast named after my nonprofit, Voiceless Behind Bars, which is owned by Prison Audio. And you can find that on most streaming platforms. And I advocate mostly for the wrongfully convicted, but I also advocate against the inhumane treatment of prisoners, the inhumane prison conditions. I advocate against the death penalty, and I also speak out against, you know, like the way the correction officers treat the prisoners, and I really want to see the prison system as it is completely abolished, rebuilt, and also talk about people who are overly sentenced, like one of my friends, Sharon Edwards, was sentenced to 20 years in federal prison. Now he's doing 20 years in state prison for a minor crime. So really just the whole legal system, but the heart and soul, it's wrongful convictions.
Right. For instance, like the sex offenders that get just a few years and somebody will get a minor drug offense and they'll get 15 years.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's the whole system is just blows my mind completely. So I'm assuming with your accent, you must be from the South.
Yes, I'm from Alabama.
I love it. I don't know if you saw the little snippet video that Jeremy and I just did. We had John from Dairyland Frights on, and we did Deadwood, South Dakota, which is like where the Wild West was really rampant and stuff. So we were doing our little pretend cowboy accents. Didn't go very well, but it was fun trying. I love the Southern accent. Totally love it. Thank you. I know in following your stuff and talking with you that you have a case in Minnesota.
Correct.
And is it Timothy McGruger?
That's him, Timothy McGruger.
Yep. Okay. And then I know there was one that you posted recently about somebody getting assaulted while they were in prison. And it was absolutely appalling because they just stood around. He was on the ground. He was attacked and they didn't do anything. And his name is incorrect in the system as well. They changed his name.
Oh, yeah. Kevin Billingsley. Yes. Yeah. I remember I posted the video of him being assaulted and they changed his name to Kevin Rogers, and like Kevin Billingsley is his legal name, but it no longer exists in the state of Ohio. They changed it to Kevin Rogers, and they're under a name that does not belong to him. He was wrongfully convicted. And like you said, I got the video footage from the prison, posted it. And like you said, they were just standing there. He had a broken jaw. And
I could not believe that video. It was definitely
correctional facility.
Go to her page and check out that video. I was just tongue-tied. I'm just speechless because I couldn't even believe what had happened. But so we'll kind of get into some questions here and then we'll go more into Timothy's case and stuff like that, since I feel it's a good one, since we're from Minnesota as well. So we'll probably be familiar with some of the locations and stuff that you talked about in the story. it's not a story, I guess. It's a real life, thing. But
real life nightmare.
Yeah, real life nightmare. So what inspired you to become an advocate for the innocent individuals in prison?
Well, 2020 was a big year for all of us. And what happened was, sitting at home, I was keep my eyes open more and more about police brutality. And I will admit, seeing George Floyd, what happened to him, I knew evil existed, knew monsters existed, that I, especially as a white person, had never encountered such evil in my life.
Well, and being from Minnesota, having all of that happen here was just holy shit.
Oh, I have no doubt.
Yeah.
And I was trying to make sense of what I saw for 2 days. And after 2 days, I thought, something enough, it's time to act. And so that's when I started posting more online about, Black Lives Matter, police brutality, all talking about, okay, this is who you need to contact when you see this. Because I saw all of us working together, we make changes. So a friend of mine tagged me in a video about, it was that fall, upcoming wrongful execution of a man named Purvis Payne. Fortunately, he's still with us. But I knew wrongful convictions happened, wrongful executions happened. I just didn't realize how much, how often. One out of every 9 wrong people who are executed are innocent. 2 people a day at the least are wrongfully convicted. And I didn't know that at the time. So down that rabbit hole.
1 out of 9 are innocent and 2 each day?
Yep. We just lost an innocent man February 28th.
I saw that on your post. Yeah, that's crazy.
So that's when I started going down the rabbit hole. And it was February 2021. I found out about Timothy Minnesota and my friend Sean.
Wow. Yeah. I did not realize the stats were that scary. Mm-hmm. So you kind of touched on this a little bit already, but do you want to give us some more information on Timothy's case and how it impacted you and motivated you to pursue this, this type of work?
Absolutely. It was, like I said, February 2021. My video about Sharon had gone viral, and Timothy's son Terrence, wonderful man, had reached out to me. And he, being the gentleman that he is, he said, "Excuse me, miss, would you mind looking into my father's case, Timothy McGruder, St. Paul, Minnesota?" And he said, he just wants to be heard. And I froze and I just looked at that sentence and I thought, how many people are in prison right now who are innocent and they're not being listened to? I just looked at that sentence and I said to him, okay, just I'll look into it. Mm-hmm. And I started reading into it and I saw that right away that three men, Teron, Greg, and Malik, had been wanted for 10 years by the feds for cocaine trafficking. They had been arrested and they first weren't saying anything. And then Jeff Paulson, who was the federal prosecutor at the time, this was 2001, said, okay, well, there was a horrible murder, very heartbreaking, in 1996 of a 4-year-old girl. A gang shot up a car at an Amco gas station. It was in St. Paul, and they thought a rival gang was in there. It wasn't. Car pulled children, full of children. An innocent girl had her life taken, and the case went cold. And so Jeff Paulson, the feds, said, okay, if you can tell us who committed this crime, we will give you plea deals. You will not serve life in prison. And I thought, plea deals. Okay, something's fishy here. And so that's when they started naming Timothy, his co-defendants. I started looking more into it, saw evidence was just hearsay. The evidence were, I mean, there was no evidence at all. It was just relied on the testimony alone of Teron, Greg, and Malik. That was it. And I saw any witnesses they had were related to Teron and Greg, their brothers. And they couldn't even identify Timothy at the scene of the crime. So I relayed that information, what I could find, to Terrence. And I said, am I correct? He said, yeah, you're correct. And I said, okay, well, let me take this on. And as over the years, as I'd gotten deeper into it, I found out this man was not only railroaded, this was very politically driven. Keith Ellison was his public defender. And Keith Ellison arrived 30 minutes late the first day of trial, which shouldn't have been allowed. But when he did, he missed the opportunity to challenge Jeff Paulson when he admitted to the judge that he had arrested Timothy and the other two without federal jurisdiction. He never charged them with anything. Okay. Again, that's illegal. The judge let it slide when he shouldn't have, because the only way to connect them to the crime was to connect them to the drug conspiracy. Wasn't able to. He referenced the drugs, but never charged them with a drug conspiracy. Okay. And so I called up Keith Ellison's office last year, and I made sure to be polite to the, and made sure that I was polite, but I asked for an affidavit that he was 30 minutes late, therefore missing his opportunity to challenge Jeff Paulson. He said no, and his secretary said to me, well, he could have challenged him at any time. And I was shocked she admitted that to me.
Oh.
I couldn't believe she admitted that to me.
Right.
And Timothy had an alibi. He was with his cousin, Kevin. Kevin should be on my podcast soon. But the night that horrible crime was committed, Kevin was by his side the entire night. He testified. And Jeff Paulson was known for going after gang members. Mr. Tough on Crime.
Okay.
And so he knew the jury would not question him if he called Kevin a gang member. Kevin was not a gang member. He was not affiliated with, I'm never affiliated with a gang, but he knew the jury would not question him. And Timothy's looking at Keith like, are you going to say something? Keith said nothing. And so there went any credibility Kevin had. He was telling the truth. And in fact, it kind of frustrated Jeff that he couldn't, you know, poke holes or anything, but Kevin just remained calm because he knew he was telling the truth. But like I said, they're just, everything was shot after that, and they were all wrongfully convicted. So the other two men, like I said, didn't do it either. But so Timothy's been in federal prison for 23 years. He's in McCreary now. That's one of the worst federal prisons out there.
Where is that one at?
That's in Pinot, Kentucky.
And, okay. He's been transferred out of Minnesota?
Yeah, they transferred all of them out of there.
Oh, okay. Wow. I was going to say that one didn't sound familiar. I mean, the biggest ones that I know of in Minnesota are the Faribault Prison and the St. Cloud Prison. Mm-hmm. And the Faribault and St. Cloud didn't, Jeremy, wasn't from the Katie Poyer story, wasn't Donald?
Oh, yeah.
Wasn't he in both of them?
I'm not sure.
I can't remember now. All the stories start to blend together after a while, unfortunately. There's just so much wrong in all of them. This reminds me a lot. I've heard a lot of podcasts on the West Memphis 3 and what those guys went through. They were young guys. The one was mentally challenged that they questioned that basically got them all convicted. And the case still isn't solved. But luckily, I think all three of them are out now, but they had to take what is that plea? I can't think of what it's called now. Basically, you're still saying you're guilty, but you're getting out of prison.
Was it a compassionate release?
No, not a compassionate release. It's
But I'm familiar with what you're talking about.
I can't think of what it's called now. Oh my gosh. It'll pop in my head at 2:00 in the morning.
No clue over here.
What is it? Well, I'll think of it. But yeah, it's basically where you take a plea deal that you are still pleading that you are guilty, but you get out on, it's like a loophole, basically.
Yeah.
But so what are some common challenges faced by innocent individuals who have been wrongfully convicted?
So, common ones are, like, for one thing, when it comes to the witnesses, a lot of times either they are being coaxed into testifying by the police, the prosecutor, they make plea deals, or they just simply don't remember very well. Another thing is that prosecutors will plant evidence, or they'll withhold evidence that would have exonerated the person that they're trying to wrongfully convict. Another thing, honestly, is race. An innocent black man is 7 times more likely to be wrongfully convicted of murder than a guilty white man. Another thing that they face is once they're wrongfully convicted in prison, this regardless of race, gender, once they're in prison, it's extremely hard to get out. Even if you have all the evidence, the DNA evidence, it's extremely hard to get out. Usually you have to find a technicality in your case.
Well, and to be able to get your appeals done and to get your case heard or, you know, stuff like that, it's not an easy task. Jeremy was just researching a case, and he was looking into like the parole hearings and stuff like that. And sometimes those parole hearings, what did you say? They can take up to a couple of years, Jeremy, before they even get the parole hearings,
which
I had no idea. I thought they were just something that was scheduled. But even though you're scheduled for it, it could still take a few years to have it happen, which I was unaware of. I don't know a lot about the legal system. I'm pretty.
Yeah, me too.
Learning a lot doing this. Alford plea. That's what it's called. It just popped into my head.
Ding, 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 ding.
A squirrel. Hallelujah. The Alford plea is what it's called. But no, I really have learned a lot in doing this podcast and listening to podcasts. And it's a lot of it just blows my mind. And in a lot of these cases, it's like sometimes you'll get the cops were on it. And they did an amazing job. They couldn't have done it any better. And other times it's like, what the hell are you doing? Are you sitting there with your thumbs up your ass? Or, you know, I don't get it. It's like,
spent the day at the donut shop.
I could have solved the case better myself, not having any experience. And just the way that sometimes it's just a, you know, the accusations. And the other thing that I learned recently that I did not know is that witnesses that are of a different race, people have a hard time identifying outside of somebody outside of their race.
Yep.
And I never realized there had, I was listening to something and they were talking about the statistics of successfully identifying somebody that is not of your same race. Mm-hmm. And it was very low, which I thought was very interesting.
Oh yeah. One of the witnesses in Timothy's case, who was related to Teron and Greg, described a black man with cornrows. Timothy does not have cornrows. He's bald.
There's a big oops.
And I mean, she described someone, you know, just who looked completely different from him. And she was even asked, was this the person that you saw? And she said, can't answer that.
Well, at least she didn't say, you know, give him a definite answer, you know. Mm-hmm. Gave him the benefit of the doubt and not identifying him.
If it don't fit, you must have quit.
Oh my gosh.
All the witnesses had pointed to someone else on the, when they were getting a photo lineup of the suspects. They all pointed to someone else, not Timothy.
Wow. That just blows my mind. And he has a solid alibi as well.
Right.
Wasn't he at like a family dinner with multiple people or something?
He was at his aunt's house. His cousin was by his side. Kevin the entire night.
Yeah.
And yeah, Kevin's, like I said, supposed to come on my podcast soon. He and I have talked about it. And I asked Kevin, what was your reaction when Jeff Paulson called you a gang member? And he said he was surprised because he's like, I never was affiliated with a gang. Never. And I said to him that Timothy had told me that the family made sure he never got caught up in that. They mm-hmm. were very protective of him. And I asked him, how surprised were you when Timothy was convicted? He said, very much so, because everyone knew he didn't do it. I mean, of course, the prosecutor knew. They all knew he didn't do it. So he said, that was the last thing I thought was going to happen.
Wow. That just blows my mind.
I think the thing that blows my mind is that, so he's basically, everybody knows that he's innocent, but yet he'd still be sitting in prison for years after the fact.
Well, it took like the West Memphis Three. I think it took almost 20 years for them to get out as well.
Why? What takes so long?
Just going through and proving everything. And a lot of times they didn't. When did the Innocence Project come into play? That's more of a recent thing, isn't it?
Innocence Project, I'm trying to think of. I think it may have been in the late 80s it came about. Oh, but
okay.
This is Project Dime, I'm kind of about, because okay. Yes, they have done some good things, but they also will take a lot of cases and ghost people. They did that to Kevin.
Okay.
And a lot of times they'll say with a case, well, we need DNA proof, and a lot of cases don't have DNA proof at all. Timothy's doesn't.
Doesn't have any. Well, I suppose because it was the little girl was shot from afar,
right?
Unfortunately, right. But yeah, like with the West Memphis Three, there was no they did not find any of their DNA. They found DNA on the little boys that were murdered, but it was not any of the three that were convicted either. And again, that was a southern town as well. That in Memphis.
Yep.
Tennessee. So, and sometimes you get into some, I know that sometimes the southern politics, like look at the what's his face that you just did a story on recently, Jeremy, North Carolina. Boy, my mind is shot today.
I was saying southern politics, so name one, you know, KIV.
Not North Carolina, South Carolina. The lawyer.
Oh, Murda.
Yes, Murda. Look at how that family completely took over everything in that town. Boy, I definitely have Saturday brain today. I apologize.
Yeah, I don't think that's okay. Innocent.
No. But look at everything that they got away with for so long.
So many years.
Yeah. It blows my mind sometimes. So let's see. Next question. How do you identify and prioritize cases of potential wrongful convictions?
That's a good question. So whenever someone comes to me about a case, I do hear them out. I do ask a lot of questions like, okay, so why do you think you were targeted? And I will ask, okay, so why did this person testify against you? And I will also ask, okay, can I see any transcripts? Do you have other people who can vouch for you? And anyone who is, innocent and didn't do it will say yes to anything, who can say to me, yeah, whatever you need, I can send to you. I can have someone to vouch for me. They can just, most of the time they can answer the question, this is why this person turns against me. There are occasions where they truly don't know, like Gary Drinkard, survivor of Alabama's death row, who was innocent on here, truly does not know why his past sister turned against him. But most of the time they do know. But if it's a bunch of, I don't know, it's one thing to have like one or two, that's one thing. But it's another thing like, I don't know. I have about any transcripts. I don't have anyone who could vouch for me. They start, and I, just start asking questions like, what was, about the police officer's motive behind targeting you at all? Like, cause sometimes condoning what the police were doing, but sometimes if someone has a few run-ins, they're like, oh, that's an easy target. Again, not condoning them, but
right.
It's just a bunch of, I don't know. Or if it's, they're trying to dodge the subject, like, okay, I need to see I need to look up your information. What city did this take place in? What prison are you in? Either they start to get standoffish or their parents will not answer. Or I once had a woman going a bunch of, well, I'm not sure. And I'm like, okay, I'm not a magician here. So that's when I weed out people, I guess you could say. It doesn't happen all the time, but on occasion it does.
How hard is it to get the paperwork and stuff that you need from the different areas, the courts, the prisons?
A lot of paperwork is readily available online. It's like transcripts, stuff like that. That's public information. Like Timothy's transcripts from his court case, that's public information. That's on my nonprofit's website. So a lot of that I can look up, just have an account with the government, forgetting the name of it, but like with federal courts, just have an account with them. You can upload that. But there are, I think a couple things, like if someone wrote an affidavit, then you would need someone that I'm advocating for, like, okay, can you make a copy of that? Send that to me.
Right.
Transcripts, I can, look that up online. But as far as, when it comes to, like I said, when it came to Timothy, people who testified for him, they were ready to talk to me. And that's usually the case. People are ready to talk to me. Anything that's not already available online, the government, does normally send to the inmate. So normally they can make a copy and send it to me.
So in more recent cases, now they have, police all have body cam footage and stuff like that. Is that something that's easy to get copies of? Because I know a lot of times, even watching news stories, they'll be like, well, we finally got the body cam footage, or,
That's been very difficult. They're not very kind about that. Even though Timothy's case was a while ago, there is still some camera footage from that time, and they aren't. And it has to do with a gang meeting when planning out that shootout that he was not part of. But it would be nice to get that video footage, but police won't release it. Okay. And like I said, it'd be nice to get it, but it's not the first time I've run into trouble with them where I'm asking them for body cam footage, some surveillance footage. Mm-mm.
Yeah. I'm sure you got to get through those loopholes, and it's probably have to
know the right people.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Know the right people or have the right credentials, or which I know even some lawyers have trouble with getting what they need. So
maybe you can recruit anonymous.
There you go.
That would be great.
Yeah. We did a case that they were involved in and they blew my mind with it. I'd never heard of them before that case, and I'd heard of it, but I wasn't really familiar with what they did. And after the case that I covered, it blew my mind on what they were able to do.
Oh, yeah.
The control that they had. So yeah, maybe just start tagging them, hashtag anonymous. Tell them Total Conundrum sent you.
Yeah, I'm sure they got an email address out there somewhere.
Somewhere. Can you walk us through the process of advocating for someone who claims to be innocent after being convicted?
Oh, absolutely. After I talk to them, I have to talk to them several times. And if I can talk to any family members, you know, after all that, I will start making a couple videos. I'll ask, you know, do you have a petition? Sometimes I'll make a petition. That's a good way to get people's attention. Sign this petition, because it just takes a moment of their time. And so that, like I said, is a good way to get people on board. And and making a video, I try not to make it too long, because I don't want to, again, lose people's attention.
Right.
And just, you know, in the beginning, hit the high notes. And as I get deeper into it, start getting deeper into the story. And now that I've had my podcast for nearly 2 years, I'm like, okay, we need to get you on the podcast soon so people hear from your mouth
right
about the case. Because, I mean, who better to explain the case than you? And that makes a pretty significant impact as well, including when, like, if I can get their family members on there, that also makes a pretty big impact. I had, and sometimes, even after, like, I had one man, Dr. Chris Brown, whose father, Gary Brown, was executed, and I had him on my podcast, just so people can hear about, look, this death penalty has a lot of consequences, even years later. So getting it, but I realized with Timothy, even before my podcast, I had him video record of him and I talking. It's one of my pinned videos on my Instagram, because I'm like, people need to hear from you.
Right.
I'm like, no one can explain this better than you. So that's one of the most important things in my advocacy, is people hearing from the wrongfully convicted person themselves, their family members, and sometimes they go to rallies. I went to a rally yesterday in Atlanta and advocated for Timothy. It's on my social media, and I'm going to be hitting up some more rallies soon.
Well, that's good. Well, and social media is a huge conduit too of getting the word out there, because I mean, I don't remember how we ended up following each other on Instagram, but a bunch of the people in the group that I associate with, like, we do trailer trades and we've done collabs and stuff together. But when you posted that video of Kevin, one of the podcasts that we follow and work with pretty closely, The Suspended Sentence, is now going to be interviewed. I don't know if they've done it yet or not, but or have posted it yet or not, but they are going to be interviewing Kevin from prison.
That's great.
So, I mean, it definitely helps. Social media definitely helps get the word out there and spreads it. It's kind of crazy. It's like wildfire in a way. Mm-hmm. And so I'm really glad that the cases that you are talking about and the ones that you're fighting for and advocating for are getting, you know, the attention that they need to be getting. And, you know, it's hard when you got, because you'll, even if they are part of like the Innocent Project or what you're going through, you still have the people, the non-believers, that will give you the you know, brunt of, you know, how do you know, and will give you all the, you know, the negative feedback and stuff. So being positive all the time has got to be very hard, but you do a very good job of it. And your videos, you make them entertaining, and which is wonderful. You do a wonderful job of what you're doing. You have a lot of fun with it. I mean, even if it's something as trying to think of one of your recent ones, but you won't even say anything. You just have words above you that you point to, and then words below, you know, and then you just simple, but it gets the point across, you know.
I do like to use sound effects music because it helps get people's attention.
Definitely. That's something we're still learning, is trying to get the different, you know, what's going to attract people's attention? What are people going to want to share? What's going to, you know, attract somebody to listen to an episode? And that's all. We're still pretty new to it. I mean,
we got pretty lights now.
We do. We have pretty lights in our background now. We have video.
We're getting up there.
So you get to see all of our dumb expressions. but yeah, it's the whole social media thing. Well, and I wasn't even on Instagram, or we weren't even on Instagram probably for the first 4 months of our podcast, because my kids used Instagram. I didn't, you know, I'd post things, I'd share it from Facebook or whatever, like our episodes and whatnot. And we were struggling to get followers on Facebook. And I'm like, what is going on? And then I got introduced to how Instagram is so great for podcasting, and just the probably 4 or 5 months that we've been out there, we're already at almost, I think we're just shy, like 2 shy of 1,000.
That's great.
Yeah. And I love it. And Twitter, and Jeremy's been handling that, getting that up there. And I started doing TikTok. I don't understand TikTok, but I've been posting videos like that we do on Insta and stuff, but we got to get better at doing our own little fun little reels. But life is so busy, it gets hard.
It does get busy, yeah.
So what support and resources do you provide to individuals who have been wrongfully convicted?
So what I do for them is I say, okay, well, first off, I tell them I'm going to get your information out there. I'm going to get people. I need to make the public aware. I need to get them to care. It takes a village. And right. I also encourage the public to vote. I'm like, we need to get the right people in office, or else we're not going to get any work done. Right. And every vote does matter. Absolutely. And so I tell them I got to get your name out there. I need to get your voice out there. And as we start working together, I start reaching out. Sometimes I, reach out to different podcasts, like Timothy himself has done some interviews.
Nice.
And so if some other people I've advocated for, and if they're able to do an interview, absolutely. I want them to be heard too. And I also try to see if anyone can either provide them assistance, like with Timothy, he's got some paralegals with this case. I'll see if any volunteers, like from a university who are studying law, can help out. And I will also talk to different websites, get the word out about their case, so I can offer them, first and foremost, word of mouth, seeing if anybody can get interested in the case, hopefully pick it up, and also hopefully get donations to my site, which will help them in return.
Right. You said like Timothy has done interviews and stuff. Are they allowed like an undetermined time on the phone, as long, I'm assuming whomever's interviewing him?
We'll be back after these messages.
Are you tired of seeing the world through a whitewashed or Eurocentric lens? Do you want to learn how to view the world from a more Black point of view? Then check out Afrocentric, the podcast that explores the importance of an Afrocentric gaze while navigating white spaces. Hosted by me, Morgan Gray. Each episode features thought-provoking conversations on Black culture, Black perspectives, as well as the Black experience. Because here, we understand that Black lives are not a monolithic experience, and there is more than one way to view it. Our goal is always to advocate, discuss, and inform Black Americans about the importance of evolving past their perspectives through an Afrocentric lens. Subscribe to Afrocentric today on your favorite podcast platform and join the conversation on social media using hashtag Afrocentric. I'll talk to you guys soon. Bye-bye.
Is paying the collect, is it, do they still do that? Collect call charges or whatever?
Timothy pays for the minutes. But yeah, so the inmate pays for the minutes, but they have like only so many minutes at a time. So he'll, so like, when I interviewed Timothy, they're like, okay, I gotta call you back.
Yeah, I have heard. I wondered how that worked because I wasn't sure if they had to do it in different sessions or if they could do it consecutively or, but well, it's, you know, and I think they have, Jeremy was just saying that, didn't you find out that there was somebody that was in prison that has a podcast?
Yep.
Oh, yeah, this is new.
Yeah, that Tex from the Manson family.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, he's got his own podcast. It's like love learning or something podcast.
Well, and then, you know, we did a case on that was out of South America or South Africa, and the guys that brutally raped and murdered this woman had access to like Facebook and porn sites and all sorts of stuff. And I was like, what? And now these guys are released. They should have never, they left this woman for dead. And by an act of a miracle, she had her intestines were outside of her body. Her neck was slashed so much that she couldn't even, the muscles were slashed so she couldn't even use the muscles to hold her head up, and she made it her way to the road and was found by somebody who was going to school to be a veterinarian technician. And but they released these guys this year. I'm like, what the hell? And then you got innocent people that are in prison.
Exactly.
Can't get out.
I can't get out. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's one man I'm advocating for, Jesse Dreyfus, good friend of mine, who submitted the evidence that proves that he didn't do it. He's got the medical records. Everything proves he didn't do it. And he's still having trouble getting released.
And even when they do overturn the convictions, it can still be years.
That's the part I don't understand.
Yeah.
It's weird.
Yeah. Even when they finally determine that they are innocent or they do the Alford plea or whatever, it can still take them years to get out.
They should get out that day with a big fat check.
Right. Well, exactly. And a lot of them don't get checks either.
It's true.
Yeah. Blows my mind. Absolutely blows my mind. In your experience, what role does public awareness and activism play in advocating for the justice reform and exoneration?
It means everything. I feel like without the public, I would not be here. I feel like I would not have gotten this far with these cases. I feel like they're like when it comes to like Jesse Dreyfus, Timothy McGruder, when it comes to Andy McCauley Jr., just so many ones, Kevin Billingsley, there's just so many to name. Matthew Baker is facing trial for the death penalty, crime he did not commit, but it's gotten a lot of attention that he did not commit this crime, and which is important because the judge, the district attorney in that case are sweating bullets because people are paying attention to his case. And that's everything, because without the public, there would be no progress. They would be able to just continue to sweep all this under the rug like nothing ever happened, and they would be forgotten. So the public, it's everything.
I think the other thing that they should put into play too is the judges that hear the initial case should not be the ones that do the appeal. Because a lot of times they turn down the appeal because they feel that they judged it properly.
Right.
I think it needs a second set of eyes or a third set of eyes. How or what are some systematic issues within the criminal justice system that contribute to wrongful convictions?
So race is definitely a factor. In the 13th Amendment, it says slavery is still legalized in the prison system. So it was never abolished. It was just redesigned. So we got to get rid of that, what's called 13th Amendment loophole. We got to get rid of that. When it comes to the BIPOC community in general, they're targeted. And when you're poor, period, I mean, you are targeted. Unless you're a member of the elite, you are targeted, because there's a lot of poor white people who are wrongfully convicted.
Right.
So when it comes to race and class, absolutely, that those are definite factors. But like I said, if you're a poor black man, oh my gosh, absolutely, that's the biggest factor right there. And if you're not a member of the elite, like you hear about the people like Jeffrey Epstein, rich people like Jared Fogel, like getting away with crimes, just a slap on the wrist because they're rich.
Right.
And I hear about this many times with the rich people, where they do these horrible crimes that should put them under the prison. But no, it doesn't happen. And you've got people who are poor, people from the BIPOC community who can't afford a good lawyer, a public defender. And a public defender either works for the state or the federal government. They're not going to go against their boss. They're not going to say, my boss is wrong. So sometimes public defenders are good, but most of the time it's not going to happen. So,
right.
I got people in prison who are not only wrongfully convicted, who are overly sentenced, who are there, you know, like for a very minor crime, like a nonviolent drug crime, people are mentally ill who should be in a hospital. I'm not saying that prison doesn't have people who aren't guilty. Like there are people in prison who should be there.
Right.
Absolutely not saying otherwise. I'm just saying, you know, when it comes to my tax dollars, I want to house people who deserve to be in there.
Right.
And yeah, those are the leading factors right there.
Definitely. How do you collaborate with legal experts, investigators, and other professionals to support your advocacy efforts?
So working with other advocacy groups, like that's not too hard because we're in it for the same goal. Sometimes you can get it a little cliquish, but not always. Like I said, we're in this together. When it comes to legal experts, there are, like when it comes to law students, that's a bit easier. But when it comes to anyone who's, you know, charging, that's a bit harder. I can get their opinion, but usually it's hard to get someone to do it for free. Sometimes they'll do an interview. Like I got a few who are doing an interview for Jesse Dreyfus, who are legal experts. They do want to give their two cents when it comes to this case because they worked with him when it came to getting the new evidence submitted. So, but other than that, when it comes to working with legal experts, it's a bit hard to without paying them, but usually I can at least get an opinion. I can at least go like, okay, well, here's my advice. So they can at least do that much, but I get more luck with law students, law professors.
Well, and that's good. I mean, I think there was, but I remember there was a cold case that was solved by a bunch of law students.
Yeah.
That the teacher was like, yeah, the teacher's like, all right, let's do that. Let's focus on this and work on this and see what we can do. And I mean, now even podcasts are solving cold cases.
Yep.
Yeah, we'll be interviewing a lady probably this spring. She's in Florida right now and quite busy as a snowbird, but so our schedules don't, like she's available during the day and I'm not. So when she gets back to Minnesota, we're going to have her on and she's got a cold case of somebody that was murdered in Minnesota. So she's going to tell the story on that. And cold cases, they depress me, but it's like I just want them all solved. And I think with like the 23andMe, you know, that kind of stuff is going to be huge for even the wrongful convicted and cold cases and stuff like that, because they're doing all of the genealogy stuff now and going down, you know, they're able, I mean, I'm sure that bullet has DNA on it.
Oh, I'm sure.
And I'm sure it has, you know, just like any bullet, it has its own fingerprint. So at some point that gun could come back into play. And a bullet could match another bullet, and it could be something like that that solves it as well.
But we want whoever did it in prison. We want justice for her.
Right, right. Because what has that other person been doing all this time? You know, they're probably not a pillar of the community. You know, some of that just blows my mind. Totally blows my mind. What advice would you give to someone who wants to get involved for advocating for innocent individuals in prison?
So I would suggest, first of all, start with cases that are more well-known, like, let's say, Billy Allen, Richard Glossop. I would say get involved in theirs, because spreading the word about their cases, like the more people on their cases, the better. They already got, like I said, it's pretty viral, so just hop in. We need more people involved, and that'll get you big toe dipped in. And as you keep talking about their cases, you keep making more videos, sharing their petitions. You'll, like an Instagram, for instance, you'll see more clemency accounts get recommended to you. And that way you can start researching these cases. Like when Sharon's was recommended to me, I Googled his name and I thought, why aren't there more articles about him? This is messed up. And I emailed his account. I'm like, what can I do to help? So that's, you know, when it comes to the smaller cases, Google their name, see if anything comes up, ask them, what can I do for your case? Because like, as you deviate from the bigger accounts to the smaller names, like the smaller people absolutely need you. Like, hate to say smaller people, but cases that are unknown need your help. Absolutely. Because like, absolutely get involved with the big cases, but people who are unknown, like, they absolutely need your help. Because that's, I know there's so many people. I know we can't help everyone, but you know, we can't go and ignore someone because, oh, not enough people are involved. All it takes is you getting involved, you make enough noise, and I promise you, more people will get involved.
People will start listening. Mm-hmm. So is there anything that we have or that we have not covered that you would like to cover?
The only other thing I'd like to say is, you know, please, I mentioned this briefly, but vote. Because like I said briefly, and I just want to reiterate it, your vote does matter. Don't let anyone tell you otherwise. Every vote absolutely counts. And research every candidate. Don't vote straight red, blue, whatever. Research every candidate carefully and look into their background, look into their morals, their principles, and say, okay, will this candidate represent me, my area? And do that with every candidate down the ballot. We've got primaries coming up. So please do your research. And I'm with Rock the Vote. So my Beacons page in my bio, you can go through. I have links to where you can register to vote. You can check your registration status in case you moved, something like that. But I'm not telling you who to vote for. I'm telling you, you need to vote, because if we don't get the right people in office, the right judges, prosecutors, people like that, we're not going to make any progress.
And how many people, just when they're going through the ballots, and I know I'm guilty of it too, you get to those things at the end, the judges and the stuff that you know nothing about. It's like, I don't know.
I've done that too, yeah.
Where it's like, okay, which I should probably just leave them blank, because I don't know. I don't even know if you can leave them blank.
You sent ballots online, so.
And what if you don't like anybody that's running?
Fortunately, there's sample ballots online, so you can research ahead of time. That's what I'm doing right now in Alabama. And but yeah, that right there, it's if you don't like anyone, that is like it'd be probably best to leave it blank. I understand that right there.
Put
Kanye West.
Back. Yeah, oh, I'll vote for him this year.
Oh, I heard that he's supposedly not himself anymore. He's supposedly a couple inches taller and different color. The whole conspiracy theory. We've had a couple conspiracy theorist podcasts recently, so it's been pretty funny. I've never really got into the whole conspiracy theory things, but some things are like, what the heck?
Makes you kind of wonder.
Yeah, it does. Jeremy just did an episode on the flat earth and he created his own flat earth.
And it was like,
oh, it was funny.
I'd live there.
As long as I could control the temperature.
80 all the time.
So we can't complain. We have had the most mild winter for Minnesota that I can ever remember. We've only had snow, what, 3 times? And none of it has stuck.
Yeah.
And
our ice is already out.
Yeah, our lakes are opening up already, which never happens this early.
Not this one.
And today was like 60-something, I think. And that doesn't happen in, well, I guess it's March now. But normally January, we're like in the negative 20s. Like, and that's not wind chill, that's air temp. And we were like 30s, 40s, 50s all through January and February. I'm like,
And she's probably like, I've never even seen snow.
Yeah.
No, I have a few times and oh man.
Horrible, right?
Yeah, big snowstorms a few times.
Yeah, it snows down there. Everything shuts down. It's like, yeah. We don't go to work. We don't go to school. Nothing.
Yeah, you drive through a foot of snow.
Yeah.
But usually the first couple snowstorms, people forget. They forget how to drive. And it's like, just get off the road. Yeah. But yours turns more into ice than ours does initially, too. So, and we've got the crews to clear the roads and stuff. So not that they ever do, but I don't think they've cleared the roads once this year since in any of the snows that we've had.
Yeah, they haven't had.
They should still be out there plowing. But well, anyway, why don't you go ahead and let us know where we can find you again or where everybody can find you.
You can find my website, voicelessbehindbars.org. There's my podcast, Voiceless Behind Bars, that is owned by Prison Audio, available on most streaming services. You can also find me on TikTok and Instagram under the username It's Sarah Only, all one word, ItssaraahOnly. So It's Sarah Only. I'm also on Threads. And yeah, follow me on there and I'll constantly keep you updated about cases. And also Voiceless Behind Bars has their own official Facebook page now. So follow us on there.
Nice.
And like I said, we'll keep you updated. And all donations, like I said, are tax deductible. And we have a new episode about every week on my podcast. So
I love it. And if any... if like Timothy or any of those guys are ever interested, we'd love to have them on the show. We'd love to hear their story. Love to hear, you know, how things are going, what still needs to be done, you know, let them have a voice.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Definitely. Well, thanks so much for coming on. We greatly appreciate it.
Thank you for having me on.
Yeah. And then maybe, you know, in the future, we'll have you back on to give us some updates.
I love that.
How the cases are going and stuff. So, well, thank you so much for taking your time on, you know, a busy weekend and spending an hour with us. We appreciate it so much.
Have a great day.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And that wraps up another episode of Total Conundrum. We want to extend a huge thank you to our incredible guest, Sarah, from Voiceless Behind Bars, for sharing her insight and shedding light on such an important topic.
Absolutely. Sarah's work is truly commendable, and we appreciate the passion and dedication she brings to advocating for those who need it most. Keep fighting the good fight.
And to all those listeners out there, don't forget to continue supporting the cause, like, follow, and subscribe, and help us spread awareness about the injustices faced by innocent people incarcerated.
That's right. And remember, folks, we're all in this together. Let's keep striving for justice and making our voices heard. Until next time, stay curious, stay compassionate, and keep seeking the truth.
Keep on creeping on. We love you.
Love you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye-bye-bye.
Thanks for hanging out with us here at Total Conundrum. Please make sure to check out our website and blog at totalconundrum.com for news, upcoming events, merch, bloopers, and additional hysteria. You never know what will pop up, so be sure to follow along. If you want to show your support for Total Conundrum and gain access to all of our bonus content, please visit our Patreon page. You can also follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. The links are available in our show notes. If you have any questions, comments, recommendations, or stories to share, please email us at contact@totalconundrum.com. Episodes are available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. If you like the show, please rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts. We appreciate the love. Keep on creeping on, mother cluckers. Oh,